This is a continuation of reading from the introduction of Bhagavad Gita as it is. For those of you that have a book, it's page 10, halfway down the page. Prabhupada writes, "The Supreme Conscious Ishvara is similar to the living entity in this way. Both the consciousness of the Lord and that of the living entity are transcendental. It is not that consciousness is generated by the association of matter. That is a mistaken idea. The theory that consciousness develops under certain circumstances of material combination is not accepted in the Bhagavad Gita. Consciousness may be pervertedly reflected by the covering of material circumstances, just as light reflected through colored glass may appear to be a certain color. But the consciousness of the Lord is not materially affected. Lord Krishna says, Mayadhyakshena Prakriti. When he descends into the material universe, his consciousness is not materially affected. If he were so affected, he would be unfit to speak on transcendental matters, as he does in the Bhagavad Gita. One cannot say anything about the transcendental world without being free from materially contaminated consciousness, so the Lord is not materially contaminated. Our consciousness is at the present moment, however, materially contaminated. Bhagavad Gita teaches that we have to purify this materially contaminated consciousness . In pure consciousness, our actions will be dovetailed with the will of the Ishvara, and that will make us happy. It is not that we have to cease all activities. Rather, our activities are to be purified, and purified activities are called bhakti. Activities in bhakti appear to be like ordinary activities, but they are not contaminated. An ignorant person may see that a devotee is working like an ordinary man. But such a person with a poor fund of knowledge does not know that the activities of a devotee or of the Lord are not contaminated by impure consciousness or matter. They are transcendental to the three modes of nature. We should know, however, that at this point, our consciousness is contaminated. Just in case you were not clear about it, there it is. One of the principal functions of intelligence is discrimination, in the good sense of discrimination, not the bad sense. Discrimination means to be able to discern one thing from another thing. Like that explanation that comes in Bhagavad Gita of Anamoya. What's the five stages? Anamoya, Gyanamoya, Vijnanamoya, Anandamoya. What's the other one? Manamoya? Anamoya? Pranamoya, yes. Gyanamoya, Vijnanamoya, Anandamoya. So each of those stages are making a further distinction. Starting with everything is food, and then you make a distinction between things that are food and things that aren't food. or objects that are meant, that are not meant just to be put in your mouth. Anyway, so there's the distinction between objects and life. Then the soul, then the supreme soul, and then the loving relation with the supreme soul. So here a distinction is being made between the like and the unlike, similarity and dissimilarity. So between the living entity and the supreme. So what's common is their conscious. And the distinction of the two is, and their consciousness in its original state is pure. But the distinction is that the supreme never becomes contaminated by material covering. That in fact never has a material covering, nor is contaminated by the atmosphere of this material world. And living entities, tiny living entities, do become covered, and they're covered by the modes of nature. And according to the modes of nature, they appear to be, according to the particular contaminated consciousness, they appear to be something they're not. They take an embodied form. And according to that embodied form, they exhibit behaviors and qualities. This is a message of Bhagavad Gita, one of the messages of Bhagavad Gita. Just in terms of knowledge, making a distinction between this thing and that thing, training our intelligence, just like in the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is making a distinction between matter and spirit, between the covering of the soul and the soul, and there's a distinction. So categories of matter are like this, categories of spirit are like that. Now, distinguishing between categories of spirit, there's the individual soul who is controlled, and there's the supreme who is the controller. Then there's a relation between the controlled and the controller. But so the primary distinction being identified here the reference that's being made here is Maya Dyakshena Prakriti, which is saying that Suyate sachara acharam, both the moving and the non-moving, chara and the achara, living entities, they're controlled by prakriti. And the Supreme Lord is the controller of prakriti, which controls the living entities. Why is it important to make this distinction? Living entities are conditioned, and Lord Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, is not conditioned. The reason it's important to make this distinction, Prabhupada presents in the introduction, is that Krishna is thus qualified to speak about transcendental subject matters. The converse is, those that are not qualified to speak on transcendental subject matters. And what that means is that people that are conditioned who speak on transcendental subject matters in a creative fashion, they're cheaters. Or other kinds of strong language. Like Krishna's strong language. Avajananti mam mudha manushyam tanamashritam. Mudha is a strong word. Prabhupada used it rather casually. But in common exchanges, if you call somebody a rascal, That's strong. You rascal. You're not a rascal. But according to Krishna, those who think that he has assumed a material form, manu shim tanamashritam, that Krishna becomes covered with a material body like we become covered with a material body, that person is not qualified to speak about transcendental subject matters. They're a rascal, if they do. But the rascals are rascal, so the rascals will speak about Krishna assuming a material form. You want to hear one of the versions? Here's one of the versions. Take your anti-poison pill, because here's Mayavad philosophy. The Mayavad philosophy says, Krishna has a material body, but it's a very elevated, it's the most rarefied quality of goodness. It's the top of the mountain. But of course, it's just part of the mountain, even though it's at the top of the mountain. So his body is a body of rarefied goodness. And within that rarefied goodness is Brahman. So when it says surrender unto Krishna, it means surrender to the unborn within Krishna. That's Mayavad philosophy. Prabhupada, where does it say that Krishna has an inside and Krishna has an outside? Where is that stated in scripture? There's no difference between Krishna's inside and Krishna's outside, because his form is all spiritual. His form is all spiritual. Satchit Ananda Vigraha. There's no presentation in scripture anywhere that says Krishna comes in a covered form, although it's the highest stage of goodness, it's still a covered form. And really, it's the unborn, unmanifest within Krishna that you're supposed to think of. When it says manmana, commentary, don't think of Krishna. What? Manmana, think of me. Commentary, don't think of Krishna. Think of the unborn, unmanifested within Krishna. Mam ekam sharanam. Don't surrender to Krishna. Surrender to the unborn, unmanifested within Krishna. That's what they do. There's a little anecdotal description of this. We commonly hear that when Prabhupada came on the Jaladuta from India to New York, he had with him Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, in three volumes. We hear that all the time. He also had with him a manuscript for publishing Bhagavad Gita once he reached America. And we also read in Lilamrita, someone stole that manuscript when he was staying in a loft in Soho. Some intoxicated person stole his typewriter, one of those manual typewriters, worth nothing. They stole the typewriter and they stole the manuscript, which is also to them worth nothing. So Prabhupada had to do his Bhagavad Gita commentary all over again. It's far worse than having a hard drive crash. You know, that's just technology, but someone stole it. So when he didn't have a Bhagavad Gita commentary, his own, he had the devotees get a Bhagavad Gita with commentary, and he wanted to teach them a lesson. And so he said, I want to explain to you why it's not advisable to read a scholarly translation of Bhagavad Gita, because they take the exact opposite meaning. They either twist the meaning beyond recognition or take the exact opposite meaning. So he was reading. It was It was either Dr. Radhakrishnan or Vivekananda's translation. I think it was Dr. Radhakrishnan's translation. Sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Commentary. Krishna does not mean to surrender unto him. Krishna means to surrender to the unborn, unmanifest within him. Prabhupada made a fist and hit his fist on the desk quite hard. Boom! Just see what he is doing. Krishna says, first person singular, surrender unto me. Commentary, don't surrender to Krishna. Just see. Boom! Krishna says, surrender unto me. Commentary, don't surrender unto Krishna. Rascal. So it's not that there's Krishna's within is different than Krishna's without. There's no such thing. For us, there is. The soul is within and there's the covering of the body. But for Krishna, there's no soul within and the covering of anything. But the form of Krishna is Krishna. So surrendering unto Krishna or thinking of Krishna means thinking of his name, thinking of his form, etc. And because of that, there's no covering, there's no filter. In our case, we have filters, both receiving and transmitting. There's filters. So like the example that's given is a light. So what's the color of light? Let's say you have a light bulb. We'll call it white light. Then you can take the bulb, the glass covering the light, and paint it pink, or green, or yellow, or blue, or red, or whatever color you like. What's the color of the light? It's still the same white, but passing through that opaque surface, it looks pink, or red, or blue, or green, or yellow. But the light hasn't changed. Same. The consciousness of the soul is transcendental. But because of the covering of the three modes of nature, guna, karma, we have a body that's it's induced by the modes of nature, then consciousness comes out in a colored way according to the modes of nature. But that's not who we are. That's not our natural consciousness. So when the practice of yoga is to bring our consciousness through linking process in contact with the Supreme Consciousness, then our original consciousness is restored, or to say the covering is removed. Tata rajas tamo bhava kama lobhada yasye cheta etair anavidham stitvam sattve prasidati. And so forth. The modes of ignorance and passion are reduced and then eliminated by the process of chanting and hearing the topics of transcendence. So it's very important when you read Bhagavad Gita that you read Bhagavad Gita presented not by a scholar, but by one who's received that knowledge in disciplic succession, whatever their position is, that they're devotees in disciplic succession, repeating that knowledge that they heard very carefully. And same, how we perceive. We perceive with filters according to the modes of nature. We don't see as Krishna sees unless we're fixed in transcendence. We see according to the modes of nature. So according to the mode of goodness, for example, You know, some foods appear to be attractive and some foods appear to be abominable. And for one who's in the mode of ignorance, those same foods that to us appear attractive to them appear abominable. And that which to us appears to be abominable to them appears attractive. Or one man's food is another man's poison. And so forth. The influence of the modes of nature are like filters for both perceiving and extending consciousness. But Krishna is not in that position. Although he descends, he's not influenced by the modes of nature. He's not covered by a material body, and he's not influenced by the modes of nature. Therefore, when he speaks, it's worth hearing, because it's transcendental. And one who receives needs to very carefully receive it and reproduce that message, that sound, same sound vibration, with high fidelity, pass on the same sound vibration. And one who hears that message directly from Krishna, or from one who is presenting it in disciplic succession, then transcendental knowledge can be attained by ourselves. But part of this transcendental knowledge is making the distinction between the living entity and the supreme. That's a, going back to the first comment, that's an item of intelligence, discerning this from that. The next thing that Prabhupada speaks about is the activity of one who is in transcendence, or the activity of the Supreme Lord. For one who hasn't made that distinction of what is transcendental and what is not transcendental, when they see a devotee doing activity, they see we're doing the same thing they are. But a devotee sees this is on the transcendental platform and that's on the material platform. And with the distinction is consciousness. The example given in Bhagavad Gita is, in Prabhupada's purport, is two people in a factory. The factory is a good example because factory, it's the very same mechanical behavior. You're making something on an assembly line. You're putting this part on, taking it off the assembly line, putting this part on, putting it back, taking another one, putting this part on, putting it. It's the same thing, same mechanical procedure, one person, next person. But one person is in transcendence and the other person's in material consciousness. Same activity, exact same activity. But one's transcendental and the other is material. What's the difference? The difference is consciousness. So when the non-devotee or a materialist sees the activities of a devotee, to them it looks like you're doing the same thing I am. Or you're doing material activity. So when they see us going on Harinam, they think we're crazy. Or either that or just we're wasting our time. And we see the things that they're doing and we feel that they're wasting their time. And you should come and join us, etc. They're very intensely engaged in fruitive activity, and they feel that we should also, if we're going to be, contributors, good citizens in the world, we should also be working very hard. Like they're working very hard. We are working very hard in a different sphere. In fact, I heard Prabhupada say this once. If there's one thing I can say about myself, I was never lazy. Certainly we can say that about Prabhupada. His productivity was that of, you know, it's n number of people. What Prabhupada did and how he used his time, like we were speaking this avyakta kalatvam, One is very careful to not waste time. How Prabhupada used time, it was like within a day, he put in a lifetime. And it was, he had so many days and so many lifetimes within each day, within his life. So he didn't waste a moment. He wasn't lazy, but he wasn't engaged in fruitive activity either. So those that see us not engaged in fruitive activity think we're wasting our time. An ignorant person may see that a devotee is acting or working like an ordinary man, but such a person with a poor fund of knowledge does not know that the activity of the devotee and of the Lord are not contaminated by impure consciousness or matter. They are transcendental to the three modes of nature. We should know, however, that at this point, our consciousness is contaminated. So although the soul in its natural state, or the liberated soul in its perfected state, are not influenced by matter, but we're now in this contaminated state. So then, I'll read a little bit more, and then we'll have some discussion. When we are materially contaminated, we are called conditioned. False consciousness is exhibited under the impression that I am a product of material nature. This is called false ego. One who is absorbed in the thought of bodily conceptions cannot understand his situation. Bhagavad Gita was spoken to liberate one from the bodily conception of life. And Arjuna put himself in this position in order to receive this information from the Lord. One must become free from the bodily conception of life. That is the preliminary activity for the transcendentalist. One who wants to become free, who wants to become liberated, must first of all learn that he is not this material body. Mukti, or liberation, means freedom from material consciousness. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also the definition of liberation is given. Muktir hitvanyata rupam svaropena vyavastitihi. Mukti means liberation from the contaminated consciousness of this material world and situation in pure consciousness. All the instructions of Bhagavad Gita are intended to awaken this pure consciousness, and therefore we find at the last stage of the Gita's instructions that Krishna is asking Arjuna whether he is now in purified consciousness. Purified consciousness means acting in accordance with the instructions of the Lord. This is the whole sum and substance of purified consciousness. Consciousness is already there because we are part and parcel of the Lord. But for us, there is the affinity of being affected by the inferior modes. But the Lord, being the Supreme, is never affected. That is the difference between the Supreme Lord and the small individual soul. So he's repeating, but now using this example of Arjuna, contaminated consciousness, free from material consciousness. And we're in that material consciousness or contaminated state. And the Lord is not. And so, manmana, by thinking of Krishna, that contamination is lifted. It's our natural state. So in the beginning, there's like happiness in the mode of goodness in the beginning seems like difficult. But in the end, it's nectar because that's our natural state. It seems bitter or difficult because we're diseased. So it's like medicine, acting in the mode of goodness, staying clean, being truthful, simplicity, humility, pridelessness, straightforwardness in dealing, cultivation of knowledge, and so forth. It's very difficult for a conditioned soul, but it's natural for the soul. It's a natural state of consciousness. And morality, in one sense, religion is involved with sets of morality. This is good and that's evil, or this is virtue and that's sin, whatever the terminology is, to be done, not to be done, and identifying the quality of goodness or features of goodness, and that's to be done. But the direct method is just surrender to Krishna. And when one was endeavoring to surrender to Krishna, that's the strength behind acting in goodness. Very much like the verse that was in the Bhagavatam this morning, or the purport that was in the Bhagavatam this morning, the qualities of the soul in an advanced stage, in a bhava bhakti stage, they're naturally and automatically manifest. So we can try to cultivate those qualities, but we're not going to get very far. Certainly not very far in the realm of ecstasy. But by cultivating attraction to Krishna, and by the direct means of devotional service unto Krishna, those qualities will become our qualities. Naturally. Because they're natural for the soul. And once, when it's coming from the platform of the soul, then it manifests in our practical day-to-day life. We had this a similar discussion, one of the questions that Kiran asked during the course of earlier class. Where is he? Yeah. It's, quality starts from the soul, the soul's connection with the Supreme. Okay. I'll end there, see if there's any discussion. We covered two paragraphs out of the introduction. Here comes a question on a piece of paper, a little piece of paper, but it's a big question, I'm sure. We are part and parcel of God. Why we became contaminated? Why God has not become contaminated? Well, because we're tiny and He's unlimited. Because of our nature, because of our tininess, is we are tatastha shakti. You know this term? Who's asked this question? So I can have some eye contact. Who just asked this question? Okay. So, you know what the term tatastha, marginal? Krishna has unlimited energies. They're categorized in the scriptures in three, and then there's subdivisions of those three. Those three are internal, external, and marginal. Antaranga Shakti is the Lord's internal energy, or Swarup Shakti, His personal potency. And then there's, the external energy. It's still Krishna's energy, but it's His external energy. And then there's the living entity that's in this in-between position. It's not, we're conscious, we're of a transcendental nature, but we're very tiny. Because we're very tiny, we can be influenced by the internal or the external. And we have a free will factor, so we can choose internal energy, external energy. But it's marginal. And the explanation of what marginal means, besides we're in between this one and that one, the example given in scripture is there's a river
and there's the river bank, and there's this little line where the river meets the river bank. So where the river is clear, where the river bank is clear, that little line, it's neither river nor river bank. It's tatastha. So like the line where the river meets the river bank is tatastha. We're tatastha. We're in between. We can be influenced by the internal and external energy. Because we're very tiny, we can be influenced. But on the other hand, the word that was used here in the first line of what we read is vibhu. It's he's supreme. We're anu, and he's vibhu. So when Krishna comes in contact with his energy, he's not under the influence of his energy. The energy is under his control, the other way around. But we're different. We're tatastha. We can be influenced by this or influenced by that. And when we have the switch, on-off switch, is trying to become the enjoyer of the external energy, then we become covered. And the other switch, the other way, is trying to engage in the service to Krishna, which may very well include, at least while we're here, engaging this energy in service to Krishna. And then we're under the influence of the internal potency, and consciousness becomes clear and free from contamination. The modes of nature aren't acting when that consciousness is on the on position. But Krishna, your question is why Krishna doesn't become. He's in control of that energy. He's not in a marginal position at all. Hare Krishna. Oh, boys to Prabhupada.
Maharaj, I want to know how Krishna gives his association to all devotees personally so that no one becomes envious of others. Here in the material world, if I like someone, I would like to be always with that person. Then how Krishna will extend his association to me?
How Krishna does what? The last part? Yeah, okay, just read the last sentence again.
Okay. Then, how Krishna will extend his association to me? How should I understand this form, Jayarada Madhava, so that I will not become envious of others?
How should you understand Jayarada Madhava so that you will not be envious to others? Just understand it as it is. Maybe I shouldn't be so focused on the language of your question, but the spirit of your question. The language of your question is confusing, but the spirit of your question is how to take up the process of devotional service so that the quality of envy becomes removed. That's the spirit of your question. Well, envy towards others is nothing but envy towards Krishna. Behind the envy towards others is envy to Krishna. So if you can remove the envy to Krishna, you remove the envy towards others. Because let's say somebody is a student, and then in the classroom there's somebody that always gets the best grade, and it's not you. So there's envy towards that person that is always getting the best grade. Or there's the athletic part of life, and you know, someone's always the best at some particular sport. Or someone in the career field, and someone is always, you know, gets the best result in their whatever it is that they're doing. Someone else has the most money and some, you know, whatever, something, there's some opulence and I don't have it. And I wish I had it. So the person who has it, I feel envy towards that person who has it. Someone is always getting recognition and I don't get recognition. I feel envy towards that person. But where did that opulence that that person has come from? Answer, came from Krishna. So it's actually envy of Krishna. But because I'm not Krishna conscious, I'm thinking of envy towards the person that has that opulence that came from Krishna. So if envy towards another person is removed by freeing ourselves from envy towards Krishna, and if we can free ourselves from envy towards Krishna, we're in the spiritual world where there's no envy. So how can we get to the spiritual world while we're in this material world? The forgetfulness of Krishna needs to be removed with and put in its place remembrance of Krishna, favorable remembrance of Krishna. Kamsa was also remembering Krishna. He was very Krishna conscious. But he wasn't devotee, so it wasn't favorable. So he was envious. He had inimical attitude towards Krishna. So our consciousness is to our practice is to cultivate the mood of devotion, of serving Krishna, so that Krishna is pleased. When that, as that matures, as we advance in that mood of wanting to please Krishna, envy will disappear too. It's a symptom, like fever is a symptom of a viral infection. The business is not just to remove the fever or cover the fever. It's deal with the infection. Then the fever's gone. Envy is like fever. It's a diseased condition of the soul. Address the disease, which is our, literally, it's our inimical or envious feeling toward Krishna. And material life is just a, whole variety, a whole array of activities that are inimical toward Krishna. Wanting to enjoy defiantly, wanting to enjoy separately from Krishna. So practice serving. Start with practice serving the devotees. So that the devotees are pleased. And by pleasing the devotees, Krishna will be pleased. Were you here on Nityananda's appearance day at the temple? No? Not you, the one, yes, you.
Come to a festival where it was huge kirtan, all day long and all night long kirtan, at the home of Krishnadas Kaviraj, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Miniketan Ramdas was a ecstatic devotee. I mean, his whole body was always trembling, and his eyes were always moist, and anyone seeing him, just to see him in that state, calling out Nityananda's name like a roar, Nityananda, just ecstatic devotion all the time. Not some of the time. He was in that constant state. Sthayi bhav. Steady ecstasy. When Miniketan Ram came into the assembly and sat down, there was one that was a pujari named Gunarnava Mishra who had an attitude towards Miniketan Ram. He paid no attention to him. Miniketan Ram could understand. It wasn't just him. It was an attitude towards Lord Nityananda, who he was a great devotee of. So Miniketan Ram declared loudly in the assembly, "Ha! Another Roma Harshan Sutta, just see! When Lord Balaram came into the assembly, he sat on his asana and paid no respect to Lord Balaram. Just see. Ha! And everyone could understand, but Gunardhava Mishra paid no attention to him. So, the inimical attitude towards Miniketan, or like disregard, not exactly inimical, disregard, which was a disrespect, because he's certainly a worthy of respect personality, the disregard for Miniketan Ram was intended for Lord Nityananda, and he understood that. He didn't take it personally. He took it as an offense to Lord Nityananda. And he fell down, and Krishnadas Kaviraj's brother, in whose home the festival was being held, had a discussion with Miniketan Ram before he left, and they had a disagreement. Krishnadas Kaviraj's brother, he doesn't even mention his name, he just says, my brother, was discussing with Miniketan Ram, and they had some disagreement. So his brother was taking the side of Gunardhava Mishra. And Krishnadas Kaviraj saw that, and he came in right in front of Miniketan. He chastised his brother, scolded him severely, corrected him philosophically. And his brother, from his heart, didn't accept. So Krishnadas Kaviraj says, at that very moment, my brother fell down. Miniketan Ram broke his flute and left. He was insulted. From that moment, my brother fell down. At that very moment, my brother fell down. So I'm illustrating by the story the message that envy towards another is ultimately envy towards Krishna. And it's an offense to Krishna. How can we become a devotee if we're having envy towards the object of our devotion? Although it may not look that way, it's envy towards another person. Ill feelings towards another person. So, a scriptural teaching, or even just say a religious teaching, is there may be some activity. We can recognize good activity and bad activity, or that which is to be done and that which is not to be done. So we may not like a particular person's activity. I can think of some persons, I don't like their activity. It's very hurtful to themselves and to others. But to look beyond that and see the soul, and there's a soul that's beloved of Krishna, just covered. And because they're covered, they're doing hurtful things. So the saying is, hate the sin, not the sinner. So it's not a requirement to like all behaviors of all people at all times. But we should not be envious towards a particular person or hateful towards another particular person. But to see on the spiritual platform, here's a soul that's dear to Krishna, and look how far they've gone from standard, if it's a bad activity, or look how fortunate they are. Krishna is very kind. They've somehow gotten Krishna's favor. The gopis were speaking like that about the cowherd boys, because the cowherd boys were with Krishna all day long. How fortunate they are. How many lifetimes of pious activities they've engaged in to get this opportunity to be with Krishna all day long. They weren't envious. They were appreciating how fortunate they are. So envy is gone when there is the envy or inimical feelings towards Krishna are gone. That's where to focus. What's our relationship with Krishna like? How strong is it? Okay, another question. Originally, we are all associated with Krishna. We are knowledgeable and eternal. We are blissful since we are associated with Krishna. But, you know what the question is, right? Why did we make such a big mistake? And what made us fall to this material existence? What was that mistake? How to avoid that mistake? So we had that discussion the other day, right? I'll just say the same thing, shorter, but a little different. Bahirmukha Jeev is what Jiva Goswami describes in his Sandarbhas. He says, if we can understand how we got into this material condition, it becomes then very clear how to get out. Yes? Just like, how did we all get into this hall? Well, some came through the other doors, but most of us came through that door. So that's how we got here, and that's how to get out. Very simple, very logical. So he reasons, how did the living entity come into this condition? And he goes through different things and said, it's some people say this, but it's not this. Some people say that, but it's not that. Some people say the other thing. And refutes the other thing. Then he proposes, we turned our attention away from Krishna. He uses the phrase, Bahir Mukha Jeev. We turned our mukha away from Krishna. So, here's how Prabhupada said it. You're looking at the sun, and what do you see? You see light. And you turn your back to the sun, and what do you see? Shadow. Turn again, look at the sun. There you see the sun. You don't see the shadow. You don't see the sun, you see the shadow. If you turn the other way. So, it's the exercise of the tatastha shakti, the marginal free will use of the living entity, turn our attention to Krishna, turn our attention away from Krishna. So what was that mistake? We turned our attention away from Krishna. And there's like a certain flavor to it. I want to enjoy. Independently of Krishna. With that spirit, we turned our attention away to enjoy independently of Krishna. In the mood of imitating the Purusha. He who is the enjoyer of Prakriti is Purusha. So are the imitation Purusha, trying to be the enjoyer of matter, which we have no right to do. Or put it in blunt language, we're thieves. What happens when somebody is a thief? They're caught by the police and they're put in jail. So that's what happened to us. This question is, what was the mistake? We decided we wanted to become thieves. So we got put in jail. So what's the remedy? Don't steal. Recognize who the property belongs to. And respect that. This everything that exists is the property of Krishna. Okay. Should we? Okay, one question here. Well, here's a saffron cloth. You know, it's right from Bhagavad Gita. The body is like a garment, which after some time becomes old and useless, and you discard and take another garment. So the body is just like a garment. It's not who we are. I'm not Mr. Pink Cloth. Thank you. Or saffron cloth either. But that's not who we are. And if the cloth is changed, my identity isn't changed either. There may be some designation, but the designation is not who we are. We have our roles to play. And our roles to play, that's not who we are. It's a service, a type of service that's suited for our particular situation. But it's not the essence of who we are. So we can accept, back to your question, we're very close to this body. We're within it. That close. And, you know, practically inextricable. If you separate the soul from the body, it's death. So, but death doesn't mean everything is finished either. So while we're within the body, we can recognize there's a particular type of body that I have. So we, you know, whatever the ways we can designate how this body is different than other ones. So male and female and, you know, this country, that country, and I have this propensity and they have that propensity, and, you know, guna and karma are there. But that's not who I am. So I may act within that frame in a responsible way. This one's a brahmachari, that one's a sannyasi, that one's a grihastha. Okay, so I have my duties. My role is I'm a wife, my role is I'm a husband, I have my duties. But that's not who I am. I act in a responsible manner according to my position, but that's not who I am. The essence of who I am is I'm Krishna's servant. And all of those different roles, you know, we have so many different roles to play, and even in this, you know, it's one body. It's one lifetime. The essence is not this role or that role or combination of them. The essence is we're Krishna's eternal servant. So we, with detachment, the answer to your question is, with detachment of knowledge, knowing who we are, and the spirit of what our constitutional nature is, we do that through the medium of a particular service to Krishna. The identification goes to service to Krishna. That's who I am. I'm Krishna's servant. And I have, Krishna is very kind. He gives me the opportunity to serve in this way, that way, the other way. So you then can be close, but at the same time distant or detached. And if that circumstance changes and the service changes, you can adapt because your identity is not wrapped up in that particular upadhi, the designation of this one, that one. Your servant, constitutionally. That's unchanging. Yes? A little louder? Relay, what's he saying? How can we put our faith in every difficult situation Krishna will do what?
Protect us.
Well, by hearing and by practical experience. We can hear how Prahlad Maharaj was protected, but we could think, oh, that's Prahlad Maharaj, what about me? I'm not so advanced as Prahlad Maharaj. But Krishna is not going to... The fact is, Krishna will not put us in a situation like Prahlad Maharaj was in. We're not eligible for that. We're eligible for other kinds of difficulties. Krishna puts us in those difficulties. So it's a question of faith. And according to faith, Krishna helps us grow our faith. He puts us in situations that are challenging or difficult or beyond our capacity to deal with. We're dependent upon His mercy, and He may even like stretch that a little bit to help us become more dependent upon Him than upon our own little, you know, feeble faculties. But Krishna helps us grow. But that's the practical experience part. Do I need to elaborate on that, or you understand what I'm saying? I certainly have in my own experience, have had not exactly, faith tested, but certainly put in challenging situations that are very clearly beyond my capacity to address. Like, you know, the service that I'm doing right now as the GBC chairman is like way over my head. It's not like trying to swim across the English Channel. It's trying to swim across the ocean. Without mercy, it's not possible. But is sufficient mercy possible? Sufficient mercy is possible. And that's Krishna's protection. His mercy. So we shouldn't go out in the middle of a busy highway and stand in the middle of the highway saying, I'm Krishna's devotee, so Krishna will protect me. We don't put ourselves in risky situations foolishly. Even if service requires, we're very cautious. But even when we're doing service, there's challenges and difficulties that we face. So the assurance of Krishna's protection is the regular and repeated realization that it happens like that. Or like the discussion from yesterday, you take one step towards Krishna, even you may not feel so confident. You take one step towards Krishna and you feel the reciprocation. That's Krishna's protection. So then you're ready to take another step. More? You're okay? Sometimes. Oh, I'm very familiar with that territory. Literally speaking, it's all beyond our capacity. But Krishna can make your can increase your capacity. So we should not foolishly put ourselves in situations, deliberately put ourselves in situations way beyond our capacity. But Krishna will do that sometimes. I've experienced. And then, you know, if Krishna has done that, He intends for you to surrender unto Him. More than you were before. When you were thinking before, that was, I'm surrendering everything. I'm fully surrendered. Okay, you're fully surrendered. Here's a difficult situation beyond your capacity. Yes. Fully surrender to Krishna. Fully depend upon Krishna. It's a wonderful life. A life in devotion to Krishna. It's filled with such things as you just described. And there's only one thing to do. Hey Krishna, hey Govinda. And it's, you know, so we're little, and then there's Draupadi, and she's big. And we're somewhere between, you know, down the lower end, but somewhere between just the total neophyte and Draupadi. But the challenge of things that are beyond our capacity are, it's part of the excitement of and wonder of a life of devotion. It happens all the time. Just looking around the room, I'm thinking of different devotees who have been through this challenging and that challenging situation beyond their capacity to deal with it. It's fine. It's not an uncomfortable place to be. It's a very wonderful place to be. To depend on Krishna. And with those that are helping to guide you in Krishna consciousness, do so confidently. Not blindly, boldly, foolishly. Don't be, you know, excessive risk-taking. But by experience, Krishna is there. Krishna wants us to be in that position. We're fully depending upon him. It's nice. We don't, you know, we're feeling more comfortable and we don't have to be fully dependent upon Krishna. But it's actually better to be fully dependent upon Krishna. It's very nice. It's the nicest. So you have that concern, then don't become a cowherd boy, don't become a gopi, don't go to the spiritual world. Because there will be so many situations that's beyond your capacity to deal with, you don't want to go there. Just stay in the material world and be comfortable. No, it's not comfortable in the material world. So the spiritual world is ever increasing dependence and surrender unto Krishna. It's sublime. Enjoy it. It's not a fearful thing at all. It's a wonderful thing. Yes. This is our last question. While chanting, we can pray.
Krishna, I'm not feeling connection with you. So, as a practical steps,
why don't you pass that sheet up and I can read it? That's probably easier. As you said, while chanting we can pray, Krishna, I am not feeling connection with you. So, as practical steps, first we should pray, or work on our connection with mentor, or simultaneously work on connection with Krishna and mentor, both. Well, why separate them? I mean, the purpose of those who are guiding you is to make the connection with Krishna stronger. Right? And what does Krishna want? Krishna wants you to come to him. And if he sends some resource to help you to come to him, that's a Krishna connection. Like once Prabhupada was asked, a devotee named Saradiya told me this. She asked Prabhupada, when we pray, is it okay to pray to Krishna? Because I don't want to be guilty of jumping over the spiritual master. So is it okay to pray to Krishna? And Prabhupada laughed lovingly, and said, how can you think of Krishna separate from the spiritual master? How can you think of the spiritual master separate from Krishna? That was his answer. So someone is guiding you to Krishna, and Krishna, who is sending someone to guide you to Krishna, they're not separate. It's not an either or. One helps the other, and the other helps the one. They're both to be accessed. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.